In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, to quote someone famous, are we on the air, sugar? Hey, we'll have Optanes and WD Blacks, G7 ThinQ, Glorious Gaming PCs, a bullet in GPP, X1 Yoga 3rd Gen, and Winner Winner Chicken Dinner next. God damn it, who broke the YouTubes, guys? Who did that? It must have been Paul. Paul's always breaking something.
Yeah, well, Paul. I've been gone for a while, so, you know, I'm a little rusty.
It's a little rusty. We won't blame Paul. We're going to blame the gremlins. But, yeah, there was a false start there. So if you needed some entertainment, then you can throw that in our blooper reel. Marco, are you ready to make some goddamn good bloopers today?
This guy is ornery today. He's throwing all the freaking curse words around. I love it. Yeah, I'm ready.
Did I curse? What did I curse? I don't even recall cursing.
I'm just kidding.
I could, though. God, I could make up curse words you hadn't even heard before. Guaranteed. Yeah, there's always time for that.
Well, we're Italian, so we can curse with our hands.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, wow. You know, hey, it's hump day, as it usually is when we shoot this this webcast we affectionately refer to as 2.5 Geeks. And yeah, it's feeling like hump day. There's a bit of a hurdle to clear. I think the gods, the you know, tech gods or business gods or what have you, the YouTube gods are challenging us, and we will have to rise to the occasion and prevail. But how was everybody's week? We were away for a couple of days there because we were traveling and lots of other stuff going on. Very, very busy right now. How are you guys doing? Paul, Marco, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
I have some crazy weather going on over here again. We had those storms yesterday, and it's a gloomy, rainy day here today. But on the plus side, it's my puppy's 1 year birthday today, so we're going to have some fun later.
Happy birthday, Mac. Mackenzie. Yes.
Mackenzie.
She's a cute little girl. And Paul, do you have any puppy birthdays going on? Sunshine and puppy birthdays? What do you got?
No, I have a dog. I don't know when her birthday is, but I am on cloud nine because, as you guys know, I'm a huge basketball fan, and the Celtics are killing it right now. So go Celtics.
Yeah, baby. Go Celtics. And he's not even from Boston. I'm from Boston.
I don't live there now, but I'm originally from Boston.
You're right. I should correct myself. Once a Bostonian, always a Bostonian too, Paul. So you're absolutely right. A little bit of Boston in Tennessee now, right?
That's right. I'm in Tennessee now.
Yeah, that's it. So, well, good stuff. The Celts are doing well, and there's lots to talk about on the tech scene as well. We've got all kinds of kick-ass going on. Can I say that? Yes, I can. And I did. And Mark, yeah, right, exactly. And Marco is looking at some solid state stuff that is rather impressive from the likes of Intel and WD, the Intel Optane SSD 905P and the WD Black NVMe SSD. Let's talk about that new Intel drive. That's something special, eh?
It sure is. So if you took the Intel Optane SSD 900, you slapped some really cool blue LEDs on it, cranked up the clocks a little, tuned the firmware, and tuned performance for better sequential transfers and higher 4K transfers, you have the 905P. So at its core, it's very similar to the Optane SSD 900P. Same controller. It's obviously using 3D crosspoint memory. But this particular card has much more capacity. We tested a 960 gig model. Oh, yeah. The random 4K IOPS are slightly higher than the 900P. The ratings are 575,000 reads, 550,000 writes on QDepth 1 4K random reads and writes. That's phenomenal. Sequentials are rated for 2.6 gigabytes per second reads with 2.2 gigabytes per second writes. Now, if you look at those numbers versus some other high-end NVMe solid-state drives, those sequential numbers, they don't look terribly impressive. But that's not Optane's strong point. So multi-gigabyte per second is still fast enough, in my opinion. But where these drives really, really kick ass, I'm going to say it too, is in those 4K transfers. And it's those random 4K transfers that sort of give the impression of a snappy system. When you have an SSD that is really strong with random 4K reads and writes, that's what makes your system feel snappy when you're doing all random stuff. And this particular drive is awesome. It decimated everything else. To give you an example, I'm going to use one of the numbers from Crystal Disk Mark. So if you look at the brand new Samsung SSD 970 Pro, you get random 4K reads at a queue depth of one of only 63 megabytes a second. Writes are much higher at 191 megs a second. But the Optane 905P, 226 megabytes per second reads with 208 megabytes per second writes. So those random reads are multiples, you know, many multiples faster than Samsung's best SSD. So that's what makes these drives really strong. They're also very high endurance. They're many times the endurance of an SSD featuring NAND. So you roll it all up and you have what's, in my opinion, the most desirable SSD on the market, bar none. But what's the hook? What's the catch, right, Dave?
What's the catch? There's always a catch, Marco.
$1,300 bucks for the 960 gig drive. So what does that work out to? I'm sure I did the math. What is that? About $1.35 a gigabyte. That's also, about four times higher than a fast NAND-based SSD. Three to four times higher. So you really got to pay to play with this drive. But if you have the budget and you want nothing but the best of the best, this thing is awesome.
Are there any fringe cases? I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm good at that. Are there any fringe cases where this drive falls off? Maybe a usage model or what have you that is just a little bit off on the edge corner case for this kind of technology.
Well, it's not a fringe case. So if you were to look at small transfers, right? They're awesome. Yeah. You look at large sequential transfers and I'm not going to say it falls off because in my opinion, if you're above 2 gigs a second, it's still plenty fast, right? You have drives over 3 gigs a second, but I don't think many people are going to complain at 2.6 gigs a second. Now, if you look at the Atto numbers, for example, you'll see that the Optane drives, they lead at the very beginning and then the transfer sizes get to about the 32K mark. And then all of the high-end NAND-based SSDs really pull away. Especially in terms of reads, over 3 gigs a second. So if you are moving huge files around, maybe you want to go with something else, but all in all, just still a killer drive. Most people aren't doing big, huge sequential transfers constantly. And those random 4K reads and writes are what are important.
Yeah. What is your long-term view for Optane in the market? What do you think in that regard? Is it going to supplant all NAND flash eventually? I think that's perhaps a stretch, but what are your thoughts on roadmap? Obviously, they're going to drive costs down more to get it closer to parity with standard NVMe type technologies. But
so if you're talking way long-term, and I'm probably in the minority that believes this, but 3D XPoint can completely revolutionize what we consider a PC. I think there's the possibility that it supplants DRAM and NAND, and you have a single huge giant pool of memory and storage based on 3D XPoint that's non-volatile, and you have all of the speed and low latency of DRAM, or at least most of it, with the benefits of being non-volatile with these, huge volumes of space. So, you can have a system with 4 terabytes of Optane memory, and that 4 terabytes is a shared pool of system memory and storage. There's a possibility for that to happen. I think that would be pretty awesome, but it's going to take some re-architecting to do it.
And there are other applications, obviously. The first incarnation we saw of Optane memory was really a new memory tier in the way you described it. The initial introduction was Optane memory, and it cached hard drives. Have you seen, what that looks like today? Has that performance changed over time? Because these straight up, full drives have really improved dramatically Looking great. What's Optane memory doing for folks these days with hard drives? Is it still a good value prop?
Yeah, I mean, it's the acceleration is the best. So if you look at any of the caching solutions to speed up hard drives and also to sort of unify the volume, have it behave like an SSD, but you get the capacity of your hard drive, the Optane memory solution is very strong. I actually have a brand new one here that I have to get to. It's a 64 gig stick. So the original ones, probably going to forget the capacities. They were what, like 32 gig and
yeah,
32. Forget the smaller one. Or that might have been the small one, but they now have a larger one. Optane memory branded larger solution, which obviously just can cache more. And Intel's also updated the software and drivers, so you could cache or you can accelerate, I should say, secondary volumes now too. It doesn't necessarily have to be your main Windows volume. So there's more flexibility. It's still a great solution in that regard. You know, hot hardware readers with the budget, you're going to want that dedicated drive because that's the way to go. But if you don't have the budget and you need a huge capacity, Optane memory is a viable solution.
Interesting. So I just thought of something. Maybe here's a pretty good setup that might be great for folks with hard drive for bulk storage. So Optane for boot, right? One of these 905s or whatever. Optane cache for caching, or memory, I should say, for caching your bulk storage. You kind of get the best of both worlds all around. Now you're talking about, you know, file load times and access times on the hard drive that are much closer to solid state performance combined with the main Optane for your OS, right? Is that kind of the best of everything and get you some bulk storage too? Snappy bulk storage?
Yeah, it's best of everything, but very pricey. You'd have a $2,000 storage solution.
Yeah. Paul, have you played with the Optanes yet, man?
I have not. I didn't have the $1,300 sitting around to spend on a solid state drive. So no.
Yeah. Yeah. It is definitely an upscale price, but I mean, no question about it. When you talk about, you know, the one thing that can affect system performance, and we've said this so many times, the one area that can affect system performance so significantly in terms of user perceptible gains, that would be to increase the performance of your storage subsystem. Marco, you also checked out some new NVMe technology. Ka-ching, my phone's chirping now. Look out. From the folks at WD, the WD Black NVMe SSD. We kind of circled back on this one because I think you were out of town when it came in from shipment. And so we came out with Samsung's recent offering in the 970. Now we circled back on the WD Black, and that's pretty impressive stuff too, right?
Yeah, so this is Western Digital's latest high-end NVMe-based SSD, and it's really an interesting drive. Performance, where it's really strong, all right, let me get this out of the way first. Where it's really strong is in sequential writes. It's by far the fastest drive we've tested for sequential writes. WD rates the 1 terabyte model that we tested for 3.4 gigabytes per second reads and 2.8 gigabytes per second sequential writes. And if you look at the numbers, particularly like the Addo benchmark, for example, you will see that WD black bar exceeding to like maybe like 2.9 for writes. It's tickling the 3 gigabytes per second in the write test all the way across the larger transfer sizes. Now, where it trails a little bit is in the small 4K transfers, where it's actually behind some of the other higher end drives. But there's a caveat. So there's a brand new controller on this drive. I think it's the Phoenix controller. Let me double check. I might be getting that code name wrong. I think that's wrong, but give me 2 seconds here, blah, blah, blah. Well, whatever. I'm not going to read this. There is a new controller on the drive. So Western Digital, you know, they have to get some experience with it and tune the firmware. I fully expect this drive to be even better in the coming months as firmware sort of get tweaked and tuned to leverage that controller better. And WD did some cool stuff with the build. So the controller is right in the center of the PCB, and then it's flanked by DRAM, and then the NAND is all the way out at the edges. And WD claims that spreading things out like this really helps the thermals on the drive. So there's no need for, you know, a copper-based decal to work as a heat spreader. And the thermals are better, and there's less throttling when it's under heavy load for a sustained period as well. Now, overall, really strong SSD. The the newer Samsung drives are faster in like the trace-based tests, and they're better in the 4K transfers. WD pulls ahead in sequential writes, but the WD drive is also really affordable. So the 1 terabyte drive, and this is a little tricky because Samsung dropped prices. The 1 terabyte drive is available for about $449, so 43 cents a gig, fraction of the price per gigabyte than the Optane drive. And it's meant to compete with like the Samsung SSD 970 Evo, which was the same price when it debuted, but Samsung recently dropped the price of the 1 terabyte Evo to $399. So if sequential transfers aren't that important to you, the Evo is a great buy right now. But if you want that peak, you know, massive file transfer speed, WD's got a winner here.
Impressive, impressive. So, you know, this technology, I believe, came via the acquisition of SanDisk, right? Is this, I mean,
yeah, so
I
know it's exactly.
Yeah.
So it's using the 64 layer TLC NAND that's the result of the SanDisk acquisition. And obviously the controllers, SanDisk been a leader in NAND storage for basically forever, as long as there's been NAND. But yeah, there's 64 layer BIX 3D TLC NAND on the drive and their own controller. And that controller is the fruit of the SanDisk acquisition as well. I should mention the WD Black NVMe SSD has a twin with SanDisk branding. The SanDisk model is the Extreme Pro NVMe 3D SSD. It's basically the exact same drive except for the stickers and, you know, the ID inside the firmware. But other than that, same drive. One's targeting OEMs in the channel, and one is for DIYers and enthusiasts.
Yeah. Impressive to see WD stepping out, the juggernaut we've known for so many years in spinning media with hard drive technology. Once upon a time, acquiring HGST, Hitachi, to bolster their spinning media portfolio. Now, more recently acquiring SanDisk and fleshing out the solid state drive portfolio that they had to, obviously to stay relevant, current. With the trend in storage, whether it be the data center or consumer client. Great stuff. Great to have all these NVMe solutions. Paul, are you rocking an NVMe drive yet in your personal rig, in your workstation?
No, I'm still on SATA, but this to me is the more interesting product as far as the immediate future. I know 3D XPoint's neat and all that, but that's further on down the line where I think that's going to be kind of mainstream. But to see Western Digital come out with something that challenges Samsung has really been, you know, the dominant force as far as high-end consumer SSDs, as far as performance and price-to-performance ratios between the Pro and the Evo lines. And I think this is interesting to see that we're finally getting some competition in that space.
Yeah. The prices keep dropping. It used to be that NVMe was a premium. Now it's very much mainstream. And the performance is fantastic when you see drives north of 3 gigs and, you know, 2 gig on the right side of things. That's just a beautiful thing. It really really is nice to see the competition. We've got the folks from Toshiba. We've got WD, of course, Samsung, and a few others that are now, kicking into gear. Kingston's out there certainly as well. Great stuff. Marco, any parting thoughts on non-volatile storage or SSD technology before we jump off?
Sure. If your system is still running a hard drive, upgrade. It will be the single most perceptible upgrade you do, and you're really missing out. A system with a clean install of Windows 10 and a fast SSD, literally night and day versus a system with a hard drive in it. Night and day. So do it.
And that's true of SATA SSDs as well. You don't necessarily have to jump to an NVMe drive. If you upgrade a hard drive to a SATA drive, even one that's relatively slower but still modern, you're going to see a huge improvement, you know, across the board, even just farting around Windows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And WD with that drive, they bundle in a few tools that help you migrate your data, right, Marco? They've got a couple of things. Or you can at least
get access to it. You get a it's not in the box, but you can download a WD branded version of Acronis for cloning. And I forget the specific name of Western Digital's manager utility, but then you have, you know, their management and maintenance utility as well for updates and just maintaining the drive, hardware health, stuff like that.
But you would always recommend, though it's tempting, to just ghost an image or mirror an image from your original hard drive to an SSD that will hold the volume. You'd always recommend a fresh format, right?
I do, because especially, no, in all seriousness, if you grab the latest ISO from Microsoft, if you haven't done a clean install of of Windows 10 with the latest builds, it's pretty awesome. You can actually do it all with voice with Cortana. So you don't even have to touch the mouse. You can just answer yes or no questions. Yeah, you can just do yes or no answers and finish an install without touching the mouse. You can go start to finish, blank drive, booted to desktop, under half an hour. So
nice.
Yes, it's worth doing a clean install if you don't have 1,000 apps you have to install and you don't have, you know, disks or files to do the installs.
Marco always chastises me for hacking my OS volumes from one drive to another and not doing the fresh install.
I don't chastise him. I listen to him complain for an hour and a half when he could have been done with the reinstall.
Well, that's the thing. It's having your data and knowing where everything's at and everything that's installed and reinstalling those apps that always sort of gets me. But yeah, data is a precious thing. So word to the wise, back up early and often. That is the rule of thumb. And before you migrate, but let's move on to something in the land of mobile, and then we'll get back to the PC side of the house. But this is an interesting new product that we are testing now. I'll try and get this on screen. There we go. This is the This is a lot of reflection. This is the LG G7 ThinQ, and there it is in Marco's hand when we were at their press event. The notched display up top, a 6.1-inch. IPS display with what's the technology, Marco? It has the white pixel in it.
RGBW.
Thank you. Sticking on the end. Yeah. So RGBW display gives you a little bit better contrast, and a little bit more pure white with that dedicated white pixel in the technology. 6.1-inch display, 1,000 nits of brightness. 1,000. There's Marco teeing it up right now on camera. 1,000 nits of brightness when you have it in high bright mode. Let's say you're outside or something like that and you flick it into that mode. Otherwise, it's a very power efficient display. Has the notch, also has notch control. And that's a little feature that we coined. The nice thing is you can rock the notch as it sort of is there in Marco's demo, or you can pull a slide down and in a control panel, an Android control panel, just flip to a notchless approach where a thin border will be placed on the top of the display. The other salient features of the phone, Snapdragon 845, as well as 4 gig of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, and the Android Oreo, of course, 8 OS. And it's got some impressive camera technology on board as well. There's a bit of AI processing going. Dual rear lenses. Let me show you that. There we go. Thanks, John. As you can see, dual rear lenses in the back. The nice thing with LG that is not common, a lot of phones have two cameras in the back for doing portrait mode and things like that. But with LG, you get dual cameras for wide angles. So you've got a standard aspect and a wide aspect lens in the back, which is nice. I think a lot of folks want to get more into the shot, and that certainly helps with it. And then as you're seeing on screen in that demo, Marco is demoing an AI-enhanced, really color grading and lighting optimization algorithm that's built into the camera software of the phone. So it will detect what's on in your shot, what type of object it is that you're shooting, and optimize color balance and lighting for it. And so it's actually a pretty impressive phone. We are now stepping through the review process on it. We actually got hands-on time in New York, and I always like what LG offers with their sort of flagship phones in terms of software complement as well. I'm currently right now, my daily driver is a Pixel 2 XL. I like that because you're getting a pure Android experience. I think LG is one of the manufacturers currently, in my opinion, on the market that skins Android the least. You know, their skinning is, I guess, gets out of the way when you want to the best currently, in my opinion, and you know, offers a few features certainly where they customize things like the camera and whatnot, where you need to add in some of your special sauce as an OEM. But yeah, really just do a good job with software setup, good features, solid phone so far. So we're gonna step through that review process. But I've been impressed with the last couple of offerings, the G6 and the V30 before that with LG. We'll have to see what the G7 ThinQ can do for us in the review and test bench area. What do you guys think, Marco? You got some time with this little fella. What was your opinion?
Really good looking phone. They nailed the form factor. The screen is really nice. They have that ultra bright mode, so like you can, you know, get a tan if you want to holding that thing in front of your face. The other cool thing was I forget what they called the feature, but the speakers on that thing, it uses the internal volume of the phone, you know, as an enclosure for the speaker driver, and it's pretty loud. I think we were like hitting 100 dB in the demo or approaching 100 dB in the demo. You know, obviously you're not going to get slamming bass from a little tiny phone, but you could fill a room and listen to music from just the little drivers in that thing. So yeah, and you know, nice OS, nice camera, nice screen, cool sound. Seems like it's going to be nice. Hopefully the review and the benchmarks, you know, paint a nice picture.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I forgot to mention the boombox speaker feature. It is a pretty loud driver. I think you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. It's really hard to replicate any sort of decent bass response in a smartphone speaker. It's just the way it is. I think the Razer phone has probably done one of the better jobs with that. This thing puts out volume, though, that perhaps you won't get from just any phone. And so the way they designed that feature certainly pumps the volume out, as we demonstrated on our hands-on video demo. Paul, have you gotten a chance to look at this latest crop of phones and specifically the ThinQ, the LG G7 ThinQ?
No, but I've liked LG's prior phones. But I have a question for the both of you, actually, as the couple of Android guys. How do you guys feel about the notch? I know there's a lot of criticism for the notch display on the iPhone X, but we're starting to see more and more Android phones adopt the notch at the top. Me personally, I kind of think the criticism's a little overblown, but I wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
I have an opinion on that, and I know Marco can share one too. He thinks about it a little bit differently. I'm less critical of it than I used to be. I hated it at first. There's something about the non-contiguous, you know, clean lines at the top, having that notch there, that sort of breaks the, you know, an elegant UI design, just for lack of better words. But I personally am over that now. And the reason I am is because if you think about it logically, it is a more efficient use of space. You're getting up and around the camera in areas that you normally wouldn't, you know. The other solution is to ban that whole top off and you lose all of the space. So now you're just getting usable display up and around the camera array, where you can put things like, you know, signal strength and time and date and all that, you know, miscellaneous stuff that you want to just have quick glance available, but doesn't need to be all that pretty. So I think it's an efficient use of space. And as long as you give, and this is something that Apple didn't do, as long as you give the user notch control, to coin our term, as long as you give the user notch control, where, you know, you can, you know, go ahead and put that clean line back across if you want and lose that usable space, what's the problem? I think they fixed it by giving that option. What do you think, Marco? Did they fix it?
Mostly. I'm indifferent now.
Yeah.
I just think if there was something to copy Apple for, it wasn't the notch. Someone should just make it, though, because you're right about being a more efficient use of space in portrait mode, but in landscape mode, it's technically not more efficient, because if you had the full stripe, you're losing that screen, but it does kind of screw with what you see on the screen, you know, because
right.
What someone should do is in portrait mode, have control, in landscape mode, hide the notch automatically, so it doesn't do anything funky to web pages or video. Then there's nothing to complain about. So I'm indifferent. I hate that that was a design cue people copied from Apple because it's just ugly.
Yeah. You actually touched on something that's a great idea. I mean, sure, you've got settings now with this phone where you can, you know, hide the notch or bring it out, you know, and it's a manual action. Why not make it an automatic action when you go into portrait mode? So that automatically the notch goes away, because no one wants to look at a, you know, broken up screen. And you're going to say you're watching a movie, there's bits and pieces of, you know, that are missing. I mean, that's kind of silly. So make it automatic, or just make an automatic mode available with a, you know, with a radio button in the UI. Should be real easy to do. You can do manual mode where you can select the notch or deselect it, and then automatic mode, right? Simple.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
They should pay us royalty for that idea. Damn it.
Never going to happen.
So, Paulie, you're an iPhone 10 guy or an iPhone 8?
No, I'm still on the 6S Plus, so I'm a couple generations behind. Okay, but I was curious because there's a lot of rabble over the notch. And for those who are still mad at it, to be fair, blame Andy Rubin and the Essential phone, because that's where it all actually began. It was a smaller notch than the iPhone 10, but that was actually the first phone with one.
Man, the Essential phone really had promise and died a quick and nasty death. I think they had, you know, it's funny you brought that up, but I think they had, you know, my opinion is not the best plan to roll that out to the market going with just Sprint as the one carrier initially. I think that was, you know, not the best idea. But yeah, that phone kind of was cool. Like I got some hands-on time with that, and you're right. Sort of rolled out the notch early and nobody really noticed all that much, but I really liked the ceramic body on it. I really felt that there was a quality to that was great. And that we had seen a little bit with Nokia phones, right? From days long gone by. Marco, I think you've had a Nokia phone or two, maybe Windows phone, right?
I still have them up on the shelf right above me here. I have the 1520 and the, what was it? The 820?
Yeah.
I remember the model. I think the 820.
1020, I know, was one. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have the 1020. That was one with the nice camera. I never had that one. But
I had that one at one point. And what did you think of ceramics? I mean, I don't know. We're used to, you know, stainless steel and glass. But
it was nice, but a little slippery.
A little slippery, you know, a little heavy
basically,
too.
You know, all phones now are a little too slippery. Everything I get nowadays is inside just a bumper, just to keep it easy to grab and have some protection.
That's true. You're going to be putting it in a bumper anyways, which is a shame. It's a shame to do that, but you have to. You have to practice safe phone. No, that's all there is to it. So yeah, the LG G7. Yeah, absolutely, man. You got to do that. So the LG G7 ThinQ, stick around, Hot Hardware. We'll have a review up, as you can see right now, in its notchless orientation without glaring the screen too much. Notchless. I'm looking forward to putting this through its paces. Paul just got done through putting a gaming desktop through its paces, the Dell Inspiron Gaming 5680. Affordable, attractive PC gaming. Paul, the folks from Dell, they actually built something that can game and is affordable. Sometimes those aren't always in the same sentence, right?
They did. And it's actually another gaming desktop that I took a look at, because last month I looked at Dell's XPS desktop, which was also a gaming machine. And as you guys know, the XPS, and along with their more boutique style Alienware, are aimed at enthusiasts and those who want, you know, a more premium gaming box and have the budget to do so. What's interesting about this system is they are going after the mainstream gamer, which is kind of code for budget, but they're going after the mainstream gamer, and they're being not only upfront about that, but they're celebrating that's their target audience. They have a starting price, I think it was $599 or $699. It was one of those two. The configuration we received sits in the middle of the pack, and it's the least expensive option with a Core i7-8700 CPU, which is a 6-core, 12-thread Coffee Lake processor, 3.2 gigahertz base clock, 4.6 gigahertz boost clock. This configuration retails for $1,100. You can get it cheaper on Amazon if it's about $1,000. Oftentimes, there are coupon codes when you're shopping at Dell. At the time of this writing, there was a 12% off coupon code that knocked this thing under $970, which is a tremendous value for a machine that can play games pretty consistently at 1080p and above, which I'll get to in a second. But to go over the specs on this, as the Core i7 8700 processor, 8 gigabytes of DDR4 2400 RAM, a GeForce GTX 1060, 128 gigabyte solid state drive, and a 1 terabyte hard drive. Part of what's interesting about this setup is they made some compromises to have it fit within the mainstream category, and also I think to create some separation with their XPS line. For example, the GTX 1060, it's the model with 3 gigabytes of onboard memory instead of 6 gigabyte. The solid state drive is only 128 gigabyte, and it's a SATA drive. It's M.2, but it's also SATA. It doesn't take advantage of the PCIe interface. But you can't upgrade that as through their website. You can swap it out on your own if you want and put something more capacious in there. But the when you're on their website, you're stuck with whatever configuration they have right off the bat. Where usually when you're shopping like an XPS or an Alienware or you know any of the higher-end systems, you can go down to the processor, the memory, the storage, and you can upgrade whichever area you want and whatever your budget will fit. This one, they have, I think it was 6 different SKUs, and what you see is pretty much what you get, save for if you want to add different software tidbits and accessories and things like that. So there's the lower-end GTX 1060. The 8 gigabytes of RAM is a single module, so you're not getting dual channel on that, you're getting single channel. And like I said, the storage is a little bit on the lower end. So if you're looking at the specs and you get caught up on that, you kind of can be like, it's not overly exciting. But if you don't get caught up on the specs too much, what you end up with, like I said, after coupon code and get this thing for about $970, is a PC that when we tested it, it handled all our games and our benchmarks just fine at 1080p. Some of them ran on high settings at 1440p, which this SKU is not really designed for, but it handled it anyway. And every so often, it could handle a game at 4K. That's more rare. I wouldn't go into this expecting that. However, it just speaks to the performance of what you're getting for $1,000 or thereabouts. There's also, I want to talk about the case a little bit. Compared to the higher-end XPS, this is a nicer looking case, in my opinion. It's not made of metal, it's made of plastic, but the matte gray finish actually looks metallic on it. And it has, you know, all the ventilations on the side and the front, those ventilation cutouts. And there is a lot of blue LED lighting inside that bleeds out through those side vents without lighting up your room. So it's not obnoxious when you put it in your living room or your gaming room or wherever you have it. If you take the case off, it's pretty bright when you're looking inside, but otherwise it's just a nice pleasant blue glow that comes out of there. And I like the design of this case actually better than the XPS. This is also a quieter system. If you remember with the XPS, we said that it ran quiet when you're surfing the web and doing general purpose things. But when you're gaming or stressing the CPU and GPU, it can get a little bit loud. This one, I didn't find that to be the case. It stayed fairly quiet throughout, even when I was stressing it. There's just a single rear exhaust fan, and this plus the fan on the graphics card. But it stayed pretty quiet throughout testing. So overall, it's not going to blow you away when you're looking at the specs for this SKU. But like I said, for about $1,000, you're getting a system that's going to play any game out there at 1080p. And in most cases, you can crank up the settings because that's how we benchmark them. And there are higher end SKUs. You can get this with up to a GeForce GTX 1070, which is going to give you more of a performance punch when you're gaming. And I believe that one also comes with the 256 gigabyte solid state drive. And I think they also have a SKU that has a 2 terabyte hard drive in there as well.
Interesting stuff. You know, Dell is has been on a bit of a tear as of late, and I think what's impressive with the company as a whole right now is what they're designing aesthetically, and that's what caught me with this system as well. Sure, it's nothing earth shattering in terms of innovation from you know, a technology standpoint. It's eighth gen, you know, core technology from Intel. It's got, you know, GeForce 10, you know, from NVIDIA in there. You know, there's plenty of, you know, pre-built PCs you can find on the market from a myriad of manufacturers that can build systems. What's nice about this is you've got a high volume OEM that's actually designing a product that looks great now and is affordable. And yeah, the chassis on it is, I was impressed. I'm like, wow, man, these guys really are paying attention to design signature and how important it is in these products, because people don't want, even if it is a PC where normally sometimes folks stick it under their desk and it's a little bit more hidden perhaps than a tabletop device like a notebook or what have you that you might have out, people still don't want to buy the beige box. They want something that looks nice, that's not necessarily in the case of a gaming PC that hints at performance perhaps, but isn't, you know, sticking out like a sore thumb. But, you know, understated, looking good, and, you know, a little bit of bling to go with it with the lighting there. So yeah, I think they really nailed the design. And it's got room to grow. The only thing that stuck out at me, I don't know, when you move to a 1070, do you know, does Dell offer power supply options on it? Because 460 watt seems like maybe a little thin for growth, for future growth, and the configuration we got anyways.
Now, was it 460 or 470? I don't remember which one of those it was, but I know on the one that they offer with the GTX 1070, it's the same wattage power supply, which tells me if you wanted to throw a 1070 in this one, if you bought one of the lower end SKUs, you could still do that and it should run fine. I know on NVIDIA's website, they recommend, I think, slightly higher. They're probably being a little more conservative in what they recommend, but they on the higher end SKU, it is the same power supply, same wattage at least.
Huh, cool. Well, then you've got that room. So you could start with the 1060 and keep that entry level price point where you had it. 3 gigabyte 1060 perhaps isn't the best. Certainly if you're going for high resolution gaming, you're going to eat up that frame buffer pretty quick. But you said this thing handled 1080p with no problem, right?
Yes, it did. Also, we should mention that, you know, NVIDIA is going to be releasing some new graphics cards later this year, or we expect. And depending on what the power profiles are on those, you might be able to slap a higher end GPU based on the next generation in here as well. So you do have some upgrading headroom in here.
Yeah. Good stuff. We gave it an approved. It is hot hardware approved. It is not like super crazy over the top in terms of performance, but it provides a pretty good bang for the buck. Marco, any opinions on this Inspiron gaming machine from Dell?
Yeah, man. Good looking machine. I agree with Paul about the case. It might not be all of the latest snazzy high-end materials on the external parts of the chassis, but it looks good. And, you know, with the right mix of parts, 1080p gaming, that's perfect for most people. So yeah, I dig it.
Yeah.
Let me add real quick too that it's not a chintzy case. It's even though it's made of plastic, it's pretty solid. Especially when I took the side panel off, it was a lot heavier than what I expected. It actually has a metal brace on the inside, and the panel itself is actually pretty thick. It you know, most plastic cases, you take the side panel off, it's a thin piece of plastic or whatever, and it's pretty light. This one was pretty heavy and solid.
Solid stuff. What's the side panel? Is there like mesh underneath that grill, that edged grill that's on the outside? Is there mesh?
Yeah, you have the vents, so it's you're getting some passive airflow through there. It doesn't have a side fan. It doesn't have front intake fans. There is a spot where you can add a front intake fan if you wanted to. Cooling though, or thermals, was not an issue during my testing though. So. However, they designed the airflow in that case. It's working.
Cool. Good stuff from Dell. Check it out at hothardware.com. We have the review up. The Dell Inspiron Gaming Desktop 5680 by the ever fabulous Paul Lilly, who did our review. That's right up top now. So check it out if you want to read more about that system from Dell. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm looking at a machine now. I'm running straight out. I'm looking at a machine now that will absolutely blow your mind if you're a game PC gaming enthusiast or a computing custom PC builder enthusiast. John, I don't know if you can pull up the link that I tossed into the chat to the Main Gear F131. We actually have a video review up of this machine on our YouTube channel. You should check it out. And that is a video preview, really, of the system. John, if you head into the chat, I do have a link in there. The Main Gear F131 is just the... There it is. Thank you, John. Great stuff. Slide down a little bit. There we go. So that's the Main Gear F131. And really, the pictures, the still images don't do it justice. You have to see this thing in action. It is just mind-blowingly impressive. It is a custom... built system from the folks at Main Gear out of Kenilworth, New Jersey, local folks to us. And as you can see there, it is absolutely decked out with cutting edge liquid cooling. The Apex ICS, that's the cooling system that Main Gear, that's the name of the cooling system that Main Gear gave to this custom built setup. And these are custom built EK water blocks. There's a big, huge reservoir in the front there, a big chunk of acrylic. Multiple cooling loops feeding into that reservoir. It is an open loop system, so the CPU and GPU are on the same loop, technically connected, sharing liquid cooling, that white deionized non-conductive liquid that Main Gear uses. In this system, we have white cooling liquid. That's one of the options. But there's also separate feeds. So The CPU, which you see there, that cooling block, and GPU are getting fresh, cool liquid from the block, and then it returns back to the radiator and collects together into the radiator. So it is all connected in one loop, but they do get dedicated feeds for cool liquid. So it really does a nice job of keeping things quiet. There is a 16-core, Core i9-7960X, Intel Skylake X processor in that machine. It is overclocked to 4.4 gigahertz across all cores, which it just screams. And then there's dual GeForce GTX 1080 Ti's, as you can see in the bottom there, both liquid cooled, also both overclocked at the factory. And this machine puts up some of the best benchmark numbers we've ever seen. Unbelievably high 3D mark score, for example, of 25,796 3D marks in Firestrike Extreme. But what's so impressive about this machine is the unbelievable engineering and build quality. I keep using superlative words, but it really is that impressive. The attention to detail, the layout, how efficient it is when you are, when you look at the machine and how each component is configured inside the internals, it is just, it just really blew me away. And we've looked at a lot of custom built PCs over the years. We've seen them all from guys like, Falcon Northwest and Origin and all those guys, Digital Storm, bunches of them. There's a few really good boutique builders in the market these days, for sure. Main Gear has always been a leader, and this thing just blew the roof off for me. I was like, my God, I just love that machine. So we're still stepping through it. I don't want to, put the cart before the horse here too much. We're going to give it the full review lowdown. I've got to really, push it and check for, performance across a number of different use cases and workloads. But so far, what I've seen is just awe-inspiring. I'm thoroughly impressed. Marco, am I gushing too much?
No, that thing is sick. And it not only is the build quality sick, but the amount of customization, it's just crazy. I can't imagine the amount of work involved to make a system like that that's also fully customizable and has those cool touches, like even the simple remote to switch to lighting. I just thought that part of the video was freaking cool.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of thought, and Main Gear did a killer job on this thing, and they deserve whatever kudos they get for it.
Yeah, I will say that cooling, although it looks cool, I mean, there's no question about it. It's impressive to look at, and it's lit, and it's like hardline liquid tubing, and it's like, wow, right? But it also performs. From what I saw, these are overclocked GPUs now. From what I saw in load testing, multiple game runs so far, neither GPU has peaked up over 50C. So they're overclocked. They're working hard. I'm talking benchmarks like Ghost Recon Wildlands, which I showed in that video. You got to check out the video review, folks. By the way, if you're on YouTube watching us here, check it out because it's great. I got 17 minutes of preview with this machine. But yeah, even during heavy duty benchmarks like Ghost Recon Wildlands at 4K ultra settings, looped over and over and over, the GPUs, though overclocked, are staying 50C. So totally cool and comfortable. And so that liquid cooling solution works really well. The CPU also at 4.4 gigahertz hasn't hiccuped yet. Just impressive stuff. It works well from what I can tell so far, but digging into it more in the days ahead. Paul, are you jonesing for this thing?
Yeah, I love the systems they put together, actually. And their automotive paint jobs, I don't think get enough recognition because they do a fantastic job with that. That's kind of in their DNA. And I've seen a few of their cases that had the automotive finishes on there, and they're just excellent.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. We actually were down there years back, and I know they've expanded a little bit in the building they're in. They've got a spray booth. So like no joke. Yeah, it's automotive paint and they're doing automotive finishes on that thing. And what you're looking at there in the model that I'm testing right now is their modern camo pattern on red, what I call the Rest Me Red in the video. And it's got sort of a Eddie Van Halen. Remember his guitar, the Kramer guitar? He's still got it, obviously, still rocking that thing. It looks like Eddie Van Halen's pattern on that Kramer guitar that he rocks with. I think it looks awesome. You know, it's definitely a statement. You might prefer something a little bit more subdued, and they do have some pretty cool paint options for just sort of solid patterns or even some sort of reflective different color patterns that or mixes in the paints that they have. You should check it out. It's a pretty cool machine. We've got a video preview of on it, and we have a full written review on the way. But yeah, that the paint too, even right down to the paint, it's something special everywhere you turn. I will say this, it is not for the faint of wallet. $9,627 as configured and sent to me on a pallet, right? So yeah, you gotta have some budget there. If you want this kind of customization, you certainly can dial down. You don't have to go with the Apex in that chassis. You can still have that custom. That's a custom built chassis by Main Gear. It's not a off the shelf chassis by anybody. You can have that chassis and some of the same layout without the Apex cooling. You don't have to have the paint. You know, you can bring down the price quite a bit, but, yeah, there goes my
your
phone.
Turn.
Yeah, it your is turn. My turn now. What are you going to do?
Marco calling you?
Yeah. Mute. Okay. Anyways, not to be disturbed when I'm talking about the Main Gear F131. Great stuff. You really should check it out. Yeah, kudos to Main Gear so far for bringing just some seriously badass gaming PC technology to my doorstep. Love it. Love it. Love it so far. We'll see. We'll see how it goes in the days ahead. Don't want to, again, jump the gun here, but so far, thoroughly impressed. All right, so let's skip on to something a little bit more controversial, and that is NVIDIA ends the GeForce Partner Program. We had a headline, GeForce Partner Program due to distracting backlash and alleged misinformation. That was the headline we had up, and we figured we should just touch on this real quick because it was notable and certainly newsworthy. It is a situation now where it is history, because NVIDIA has pulled the plug on it. The allegations were that the program was comprised of requirements that spoke to exclusivity for the brand and, you know, sort of forced manufacturers' hands in terms of dedicating a product line or their only product line to NVIDIA. GeForce products only. And we also heard, you know, the flip side of that is that no, NVIDIA was not looking for pure exclusivity. They were looking for at least some focus on a brand line, a model or a brand line within an OEM, rather, excuse me, that is GeForce dedicated. Lots of different he said, she said sorts of problems with this that went around, mostly because the specifics of the actual contract were not public information. These were legal documents or, sort of agreements that were between OEMs and not for public information. But it certainly got out and was broke by Kyle over at Hard OCP, who brought it to light. And then the industry started talking about it. So, Marco, why don't we let you tackle this real quick and I guess give us your 10,000 foot view and opinion on it. And then we'll wrap that one up. Because it's history. Yeah,
I mean, I was not privy to any of the private contracts. I know what I heard via some OEMs and know what I've heard from NVIDIA and what we've discussed. I don't know. I think you kind of straddled that line fine. If NVIDIA was trying to do some sort of backhanded exclusivity, it wasn't going to fly. It was going to cause lawsuits at some point. So whether or not that news was 100% true or misinterpretations of the contracts, it really doesn't matter because the program is dead now. So it's in the coffin.
Yeah. 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 You know, I think, I mean, it's important and newsworthy. I think, you know, the community spoke its opinion and NVIDIA listened, and whether or not there was sort of anti-competitive intent behind that, you know, is subject to debate depending on, you know, which side you take a view. I think most folks got a whiff of this and said, doesn't smell right to me. I don't like it. And so NVIDIA just decided to distance themselves from it. And that's obviously probably a wise choice from a PR and optics point of view. I think that makes sense. Sort of interesting times we live in these days when manufacturers, really, you know, it's sort of indicative of manufacturers trying to leverage their own brand strength, to their best advantage. And in this case, you know, NVIDIA, obviously with GeForce, very dominant in the market right now. As a company, doing very well. Trying to invoke a little muscle on that thing. And you can only go so far. And I guess I don't think we're going to judge too much about it in terms of how far they went. But it's over and done. Paul, did you have any remaining thoughts on that before we close the lid on that forever?
No, I mean, like you said, whatever happened, and it's done and in the past now. Nobody on the inside really wants to talk about it, so we're not ever going to get the full story, I guess you could say. But, you know, it's like you said, NVIDIA decided that even if good intentions, which is what NVIDIA said, the optics weren't right on it. So just get rid of it and call it a day, move on.
Yeah, we had heard from specific OEMs that, you know, there was, you know, what they felt was anti-competitive language in there. And then NVIDIA was very emphatic with us about the fact that, hey, we're just looking for focus on one of the brand lines, and it doesn't have to be an existing one. Could be a new one you carve out for us. Again, back and forth, he said, she said, and a whole lot of energy burned up for really what at the end of the day amounted to a whole lot of nothing. But who knows if it was allowed to continue, how it would have shaped the landscape. It's really tough to say, but it's history now, and never a dull moment in technology. Passionate folks out there. And it's actually, I will say, the one positive about this whole thing is that it is refreshing that voices get heard. And you know, these manufacturers that are catering to, you know, the audience and the demographic, they listen and react. And so, it's good that to at least have healthy exchange and discourse on this this kind of stuff when it comes up, right, Marco? Healthy.
Yes, healthy.
Like eating your vegetables. Exactly. So I'm gonna wrap up here because we're getting to the bottom of the hour. But Marco, you are about to get into your Santa's workshop and build yourself a gaming rig for somebody else, actually, right?
Yes, we finally wrapped up the contest, and we have announced the winner of our spring giveaway, where we partnered with AMD and Corsair with some really cool hardware. So AMD Ryzen 5 2400G and a nice ASRock motherboard. all wrapped up with some beautiful Corsair accessories, you know, gorgeous Crystal Series case, 16 gigs of Corsair RAM, K70 rapid fire keyboard, power supply, RGB mouse, lots of good stuff. The winner was Beholder88. Congratulations, brother. I have the motherboard and processor in hand. Corsair is shipping the rest of the stuff to me now. As soon as I have it, I will build you your rig on video so we can show it off and get it out to the winner.
There you go. Giving stuff away. Giving full gaming PCs away. I wonder if the guys at Manga will let me give away that rig.
No. Yeah, give it away to yourself.
Yeah, that would be wishful thinking. But yeah, congratulations, Beholder88. Is the user, and man, I tell you what, Marco's going to be putting together an immaculately built system based on AMD Raven Ridge, and it will be well built and have room to grow with you for years to come. And we try and give away a system or something every month almost at hothobber.com. So we'll have another contest on the way any day now. Just got to stay tuned. We're usually trying to line up manufacturers within a week or two of completion of the previous giveaway. So stay tuned, stick around. I'm sure if you hop around the site, you'll bump into community members who have been former winners in the past. And so it's real, and it's easy to win if you just contribute and stick around hothardware.com, where you'll find us on the web, youtube.com/hothardware or hothardwarevids, where hopefully you're going to thumbs up and subscribe here, because we want to notify you when we go live with the 2.5 Geeks webcast. Twitter.com, where you can tweet us, twitter.com/hothardware and facebook.com/hothardware. Guys, words of wisdom for the rest of the week, because, man, it's been a bit of a grind so far. I need something positive. Help me out.
I'm positive that I have a ton of work to do, but I'm going to get it done, and that's it. I can't lift you up, dude. I'm sorry.
Oh, let down. Paul, you get some uplifting words and all?
I do. We were talking about NVIDIA. GPU prices are back at MSRP and in stock again, so that's a positive. Ooh. Also, yes. Go Celtics. Celtics over Warriors in seven.
Go Celtics. You know, I do have some words of wisdom, and it comes from Calvin Coolidge. This is my son's, and I'm so proud of the kid. It's unbelievable. This is my son's signature on his emails from college. The slogan, "Press On," has solved and always will solve the problems of the human race. So press on. And thanks for watching. Thanks for stopping by.